And a caution about this next story, it deals with suicide. What we want to talk about is the alarming phenomenon of suicide enablers, people who encourage others to die when they're most vulnerable.
And today we're going to focus on a specific website where participants provide methods, encouragement, even pressure to die. It is important to know about these sites because some people find them when they're looking for support, and support is not what this site provides. New York Times reporter Megan Toohey collaborated on an investigation of this site, which we will not identify. She and her co-author confirmed 45 deaths by people who used this site, some teenagers. The article is called "Hear the Despairing, Log On, and Learn Ways to Die." Megan, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So this website, who goes on it and what do they talk about?
So this is a website that was launched in March of 2018. And it has drawn tens of thousands of members. We found that it draws 6 million views each month. So that goes well beyond Wow. the people who actually take the time to sign up and become members. And this is a website that has drawn young members. Nearly half were under age 25. The profile of many of these users appears to be people who have struggled with depression, bipolar, and other types of mental illness.
Yeah. And you write a fair bit about what are called goodbye threads on the site. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah. So what makes this site so uniquely dangerous and also what tips it into potential criminal activity is that it makes detailed methods of suicide front and central. So there's detailed instructions on dying by hanging, dying by poison. There's a lot of incentives for members to not just gather information, but to communicate with each other. And a lot of the discussion that takes place there is basically people nudging each other along as they openly discuss their suicidal plans. And among the most viewed posts are what are known as goodbye threads, where people actually narrate their attempts in real time as other members weigh in with thumbs up and heart emojis and well wishes. You know, when we talked to suicide experts, they said that for most people, suicidal thoughts are temporary. But if people learn effective methods and if they become convinced that it's the right thing to do, they're more likely to follow through. And we saw that. We were able to identify 45 members who had died. There was a 17-year-old in Texas who was struggling with virtual school in the midst of the pandemic. And he went on this site last January. And in less than a month, he had learned a method and followed through and narrated his attempt with other members weighing in with positive support.
You wrote about one person who you were able to identify, Daniel Del Canto. Can you tell us a little bit about his story?
Yeah, so Daniel Del Canto was a 16-year-old in Salt Lake City, Utah. When he was around 13, he had suffered from a depression that had prompted his parents to steer him into treatment and medication, which he stopped taking because his doctors agreed that he was doing so well that he no longer required those things. But by the time he was 16, he was starting to suffer from anxiety over like an undiagnosed stomach problem. And so while he was getting straight A's and seemed to be doing really well, he had started to go online and he found this website. And it was only a matter of months before he learned a method of suicide and essentially live blogged his death with these other members weighing in with messages of support. His parents had no idea that he was on this website until it was too late.
Now, I guess just to be clear, on this site, there is some level of debate, is there, that some people say, are you sure this is a good idea? I mean, I found the site and I saw a little bit of that too.
Sure. There are conversations of the reasons to keep fighting and trying to get better, but there's way more discussion of the reasons to die.
Okay.
And it's really important to recognize that this is a site that was very purposely designed by these two figures who themselves subscribe to very dark outlooks. And so even though there are parts of the website where there are links to resources, they also made clear that people who signed on just to do that wouldn't be allowed to participate. And it was telling that these two figures had gone to such great lengths to hide their identities.
Well, you and your team tracked down these two men. You found them in Alabama and in South America. And you portray this, right, this digital cat and mouse game to stay ahead of regulators or stay ahead of these domain name companies to keep the site up. Since the story published, what's happened to these men?
Mm-hmm. So this website had come to the attention of authorities around the world. You know, Families Left Behind and others have been outraged that a site that's so clearly dangerous, I mean, it's illegal in many countries and also in many states here in the United States to assist or encourage suicide. And so Germany, Australia, the authorities there have succeeded in restricting access. But here in the United States, when families went to Congress, went to law enforcement, went to the tech companies that helped make this website accessible, begging them to do something, they basically looked the other way. And nobody was trying to figure out who the two men were who were operating this website.
So does that include search engine companies, companies that sell these domain names? They did nothing?
They did nothing. In fact, a lot of people find this website through simple Google searches. And when families and even authorities in Australia went to Google saying, please, you know, you've got to remove this website from your search results, they basically said, listen, we are just holding a mirror up to society.
We're just the messenger of this information.
Exactly. But we at the New York Times thought it was really important to figure out who these two men were behind the site. And after many months of investigating, we were ultimately able to track them down. One is Diego Galante. He lives in Uruguay. The other one is named LaMarcus Small, and he lives in Huntsville, Alabama. And we contacted them before the story published. And at first, they both denied having anything to do with it and essentially hung up on us. The one in Uruguay came back to us and said that he had been a user of the website, but claimed that he had never been an administrator or founder of it. By that point, we had extensive evidence showing that they were, in fact, the people who had founded and operated this website. And since the story was published, they have essentially resigned from the website.
Yeah, I do want to ask you about this because a lot has happened since the story ran in early December. So what's happened to the site? What's happened to the men since your story ran?
The two men have resigned, and the new administrator made the information on methods, which was clearly one of the most dangerous aspects of it, made it not visible to the public. You have to be a member in order to access that information. But meantime, Congress has acted on our investigation. And so members of Congress and senators have reached out to these tech companies like Google saying, we want an explanation for how it is that you help make this site accessible and otherwise support it and whether or not those things can change, while also putting pressure on the U.S. Justice Department to investigate and ultimately prosecute these Diego Galante and LaMarcus Small, the two men who founded the site and ran it for so long. Finally, there are law enforcement officials in Uruguay, where Diego Galante lives, who have already launched a criminal investigation.
Finally, I mean, you mentioned that people who are signed up as members of this website can still see these methods. And it raises, I guess, a broader journalism question we have for you is, how did your team decide whether to pursue this story and how much information to include? I mean, surely people who are listening to us talking, people who read the story, some of them might have said, hold on, why are you even bringing attention to this topic? You're giving it oxygen.
The suicide rates have been going up in this country over the last 15 years, especially among young people. And those are the people who are going on and receiving detailed instructions and encouragement on how to die. And we had discovered this website as we were doing reporting on online harms. And here on this website was perhaps the most stark example of online harm. And once we discovered this site and were able to document that as many as two members are dying a week on this website, we felt an ethical obligation to report on that and explain how is a website like this allowed to operate. The answer to those questions have implications well beyond this one specific website. What are the protections for minors and for vulnerable viewers of the internet? You know, should there be greater restrictions? Should website operators be held accountable for the harm that takes place on their websites? And the hope was that this was going to bring about more accountability than anything else.
Megan Toohey of the New York Times talking about her investigation into a website that encourages and facilitates suicide. Megan, thank you for taking the time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
And this note, if you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number is 800-273-8255.